Knots, and welcome to this week's episode of Observations. I'm your host, Sovereign Sire, and as always, I'm here with the lovely, the legendary Mr. Dick Avery, Commander-in-Chief of Julieland.com.
Yo,
I'm here.
Oh, well, that's good.
Welcome back, everybody.
Now that we've taken attendance.
Exactly. Here.
And today, I am in the Sov Pod with Willie Hunter. A lovely, lovely gentleman. Why don't you introduce yourself?
That was nice of you to say that of me. I'm a lovely, lovely gentleman. I am a gentleman. My name's Willie Hunter. I'm a comedian.
And where can my listeners find you? What kind of comedy do you do?
I do stand-up comedy. I perform a lot at the world-famous Comedy Store on Sunset Boulevard. I'm paid regular there. Name's on the wall. My name's on the wall.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. How's that work?
Well, you do years of open mic, and then you do years of working there, and then some guy says, you're passed. I'm like, okay.
So is that kind of like you have to sleep your way to the top?
No.
Who did you sleep
with? I wish I could have slept my way to the top.
It's kind of like you not sleep your way to the top.
Trust me.
Or did you sleep your way to the bottom?
In my case, it will always be the bottom. I wish I could sleep my way to the top.
Can I tell you, you're a comedian? Rodney Dangerfield, one of his best lines ever was, you don't know the people I slept with to get to where I am today. All the wrong ones. One of my favorite lines. Like, yes!
What was that old joke? It was like, did you hear like who the blonde slept with to get ahead in Hollywood?
No.
The writer.
Yeah, yeah. You have to. That's what's
good. I like that.
That's so true. People like they have a talent coordinator at the Comedy Store. That's the guy that does everything. But if you're some like new person coming in, you see like the managers of the club, and they don't really do anything. But I'll see all these girls sleeping with our manager. And then they're like, so I get any spots? He's like, I don't do the spots.
Yeah.
I'm like, you just wasted a year and a half of this manager for no reason.
Yeah.
So
that's
it's funny.
A really long time.
It is. Yeah.
Dave Foley once said, you know, it's not about what you're worth. It's about a return on investment.
Yeah. Yes.
Or is it it's the whole same thing? The whole line of is the juice worth the squeeze?
Right. Exactly. So today's topic is we wanted to talk about feelings. And
I have none.
Everyone has feelings.
Everyone has feelings, but if you notice, like in today's generation, it's all about the popular meme is "I give zero fucks." Mm-hmm. I have zero fucks left to give, and various variations on that theme. So my question for you is: exactly how many fucks do you give?
I give like maybe 5%. I like to say zero fucks, but I give a little fucks.
Right, I feel like, is there anything, what's wrong with giving a fuck?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, you have to be aware, right? You can't just be like, I don't give a fuck. Like, no, you got to. You get hit by a car or something, I don't know.
Well, it just seems like, I think like today, it seems very much that there's a taboo against caring about things, feeling things. Everyone wants to be, like in the dating scene, everyone wants to be the one that, you know, doesn't care. It's really cool.
I think it's just a cool thing to say, too. Zero fucks. And I think it's like when, for a while, people were bragging about not getting enough sleep. Remember that whole thing? Oh, I have not slept in days. Like, just sleep? But people like saying, I haven't slept. And I think people like saying, I give zero fucks. I think that's just, they do care. Everyone cares.
Right.
But I think people like
saying
that.
Don't you just think people in general just fucking like to bitch all the time?
Yeah.
Like, I always tell people, like, it's a national pastime, especially for Americans.
Yeah.
Bitch, bitch, bitch.
Well,
oh,
yeah, because
it's fun to complain.
It seems like people have a plethora of feelings.
Yeah.
I always say, like, people always yell at me, like, oh, you need to be more positive. I'm like, yeah, I'm positive that life sucks. I think that's pretty positive. Right?
I'm positively negative right now.
Exactly.
I am 100% in this.
Exactly. But I just feel like what you guys are talking about, it's funny. I just feel like it's America, though, because I think if you do travel outside of America, you'll see cultures are so much more positive, mm-hmm. better about life. It's something about America, because I think we're all...
We're spoiled.
Well, that, I think we're set our target so high, you know, the American dream, this bullshit.
And that doesn't even exist anymore.
I know,
too.
And it's a con game anyways. But like, nobody ever reaches it, so then you're miserable. Like, so they say the happiest country on the planet is like Denmark, because, and they interviewed people there, and they said, oh, because we don't try for anything. So if anything happens, it's...
I feel like our culture has become so narcissistic too. I mean, do people really feel anything? It's like, besides feeling bad that they're not.
Well,
like,
we all feel like we're special, you know?
Well, we certainly all have a platform now, right? Like
Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You know, I was taking a selfie earlier today. I'm not going to lie to you.
Oh my.
I love taking selfies. I don't know why. I don't know what, like, I just love putting the camera in my face and just taking, like, pictures of myself. I have, like, a bunch of selfies in my phone and only release maybe 10 of them.
Right.
But
oh
my God. I don't know why I'm obsessed with pictures of myself.
Do you ever think about, like, 100 years from now when you're gone and they're gonna, that's going to be the record of your life? A bunch of pictures of yourself.
Yeah.
Oh. I can't get into that.
It's like, I got a camera and I got this whole world. What do I want to take a picture of? Oh, me.
Exactly. He'd be standing in front of the Eiffel Tower. Yeah. That's pretty cool, but I think I'm better.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, no, that was the thing. I was in Versailles and at the chateau, it was like, everyone had these selfie sticks. And I was like, like culture really hasn't changed. It's like 300 years later.
Yeah.
And in the place where the aristocrats used to, like, you know, piss in the corners while they were mm-hmm. waiting to have an audience with the king. Now people are there with selfie sticks. Yeah. Like, it was, like, strangely fitting. I was like, oh, things haven't really changed. It's still people just, like, trying
yeah.
to
still a bunch of losers.
Cool. Yeah, it's still a bunch of people trying to, you know, look amazing and share their accomplishments. And
I got a question. So do sure. comedians have feelings? Because, like, a lot of comedians, they always say, come from this dark world, dark life.
I think they do.
We have a lot of feelings.
Like, I'm looking at you right now, and I'm
are
wondering,
you sensitive?
Like, in what particular way you're fucked up.
What's your problem?
No,
what's
my problem? You don't get into stand-up comedy without having some kind of exotic psychology.
Absolutely.
I'm convinced.
Honestly,
I think it's bipolar.
Can maybe? I just tell you right now,
sure.
This is really not a podcast show. This is an intervention. Your parents told us to bring you in and have a little talk.
Welcome to it.
Exactly. No. This comedy thing, let
it
go.
A whole different kind of selfie.
My mom's been saying that for 8 years. Yeah. So you still doing that comedy thing? Like, yeah, mom, it's been 8 years. It's not a thing anymore. It's my career.
Trust me, my mom asked me when I was 30 after being a photographer for 20 years, like, what are you doing with this? Are you going to get a real job? Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, like, really?
I think the emotion that most comedians have, and you could, if you take away the laughter part of comedy, it's pretty psychotic what we're saying on stage or tweeting or saying. It's almost more anger. It's an angst against society. I think that's what it is.
Absolutely.
Like, I have 2020 vision of how the world really is.
Right.
And comedians, I think we all have that, so we're always, like, miserable, angry,
what's there to be happy about?
There's nothing to be happy about except making fun of things, and then it's happiness.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I think...
Do you find your happiness in other people's misery?
You know, I used to, but not anymore, because okay. I catch myself going, God, I'm a really bad person. Why? You know?
I'm obsessed with that lately, though. Like, people's... I had tweeted something like... RT this if you're live your life so dishonestly that mm-hmm. you know you have to check who you're sending a text to 3 or 4 times before you send it, or like your whole life will like go up in flames.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of people like faved it but didn't RT it. Mm-hmm. And so then I was like, well, it's good to know that we're still obsessed with looking like good people. No one wants to own it, but everyone's favoriting it because they felt themselves there. And my obsession lately is like in everyone's rather kind of naked quest to merely appear.
Oh yeah,
like
everyone
a good
wants to appear like a good person. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like Christmas, you feel like you're a good person. And I gave a quarter in this, you know, Salvation Army, but I'm a good person. Like you can do that every day. No.
Yeah.
Only during Christmas.
Yeah. You give the quarter in as you're walking away. Fucking
yeah.
Santa Claus.
Yeah.
So fucking annoying and like you bitch and complain.
I used to be like that. Like I used to be very cynical. That's the thing. It was.
Yeah.
At what age did you start being cynical? This is what annoys me. Because I feel like you have to earn. You have to be like 40.
You have to earn it.
You have to be 40.
But I think
it.
I became cynical at age 12. And I'll tell you why, because my biological father left.
Okay.
So I was like, the man that gave birth to me just exited my life. Fuck everyone. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
So then I started looking at life differently and I didn't trust anyone. And then I started in comedy. I want to say maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, I had to do new mushrooms. That's what it was.
Magic.
Yeah. Okay, you were like every single person perspective. In here has been like, I took mushrooms and I became like...
I became a different person.
A different person.
It's like same with me. When I first did drugs, but I did ecstasy. I didn't do drugs till I was...
Yeah, I'm not an ecstasy person.
This is actually on point because I feel like ecstasy for me was... I loved ecstasy when I would take it, mushrooms. But most people, it seems like they do have a hard time expressing their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do something like ecstasy or mushrooms where it's suddenly they feel safe to express how they feel and it becomes this really transformative
I've done a lot of drugs
experience.
In the past few years. Cocaine, mushrooms.
We call cocaine here Ken.
Ken?
And because it's because in my universe, yeah. As we like to call Ken Brockton, mm-hmm. and I have a website called kenbrockton.com.
Oh boy,
we call Ken because in where I've traveled in Australia, they always say cocaine and champagne, and they call cocaine down there rack.
Oh,
so rack it up, mate, is what you always hear. Rack it up, mate, and there's lines everywhere.
Oh
and
my
like,
god,
yeah,
so, that sounds so aggressive.
We call Ken.
Australians are very aggressive.
They are aggressive people.
We call Ken because we always say who's coming to the photo shoot. We always say Ken and Barbie, which is cocaine and champagne. So Barbie's champagne.
Cocaine and champagne. Those are just two things that just sound good together.
Yeah,
they're and perfect. Champagne. That's the only way to do it. Seriously.
Really?
Oh, by far.
I hate champagne
because
too.
Yeah, I do too. But it's like you get the high of the cocaine and you're buzzing. But that champagne just is enough. Yeah. Just keeps you going. I've done it for 48 straight hours, yeah. locked up in a hotel
room.
Well,
I take cocaine to sober up, so I use it differently.
Well, a lot of people do.
Yeah, yeah. Right? So I don't remember I've done it like sober. It's always like I'm drunk and they're like, I gotta sober up. Yeah. I gotta work in the morning.
I gotta work right now.
Whenever I take an Uber and they're like, are you going to work? And I'm always like,
exactly.
Work? No.
I only do it to create. I always tell people I will not do drugs just to sit around and do drugs.
Oh God, no!
It's
a waste of a high, and you feel like a piece of shit. You know, to be honest with you.
So how do you deal with feelings? How do you like in comedy?
Drug use.
I mean,
besides
drug use,
I do things that I like, and it's very simple. I'm obsessed. I don't know if I'm obsessed, but I like watching videos of Michael Jackson. So if I feel a little sad, I'll just watch Michael Jackson on the Bad Tour, 1987.
I'm the same way. Like, my thing is
that's horrible.
My thing is like
that's a horrible tour.
Pictures of baby animals.
I love Bad Mike. The tour was not that good. Dangerous Tour is the best one. I like Victory Tour too, with the Jacksons.
No. I saw the Off the Wall Tour, Triumph Tour in 1970. I can show you the ticket stub too. It's 1979.
Yeah.
1980. I saw Oakland Coliseum. And when he was black and he was amazing, this is before he started turning white. And it was one of the best shows I've ever seen to this day. Like, you could not sit down. The whole show, nobody sat down. You had to stand. Then I saw it years later, the Victory Tour at Dodger Stadium.
Yeah, the worst. Yeah, I saw that and it was sloppy. Ugh. You see why he left his brothers after that.
Yeah, exactly.
He was like, look, you guys are just.
They couldn't keep up.
Yeah. They sounded horrible. I remember, I think they had like Eddie Van Halen came on stage one time to play, and his guitar was unplugged, so he was like, "Come on!" And he didn't play with him. It was horrible. That I mean, I just
off
do things.
Wall,
I like. I also like. I like looking at documentaries.
I really enjoy documentaries too. It's like a huge thing for me.
Yeah,
I love.
Isn't that weird? It's like if I'm sad, I'll watch. You know, like yesterday, I watched this whole thing on Tesla. Nikola Tesla.
No, I'm obsessed with biography because it's very. I'm very interested to see sort of other people's experiences, and I guess maybe to compare. Like to kind of see.
And it kind of puts your life in perspective, so you can be like, "All right, then you're not the only one going through things here."
Yeah, and you're also, I'm convinced I am a loser. It's really cheering me up.
Kind of like how being online has changed the way that we deal with our feelings. Because the other extreme, though, I would think. Would be like with trolling and like on Twitter, like when people are allowed to be anonymous. There's two main things I see a lot of times with technology, which is like people feel far more comfortable expressing anger.
Mm-hmm.
And then falling in love.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's like I was working on an essay about like the man who wasn't there. It's an article for an online magazine I write for. Mm-hmm. But I was writing about this experience of like the time I fell in love with the guy where it's like I catfished myself, where it was kind of like he never knew, but like I just became infatuated, fixated, whatever. But it was this place to put all my love feelings, which maybe our heart, you know, when I tend to feel very isolated.
I'm gonna get very deep here.
Do it.
I don't know
Go
if deep, but I think people like putting that stuff on the internet because it kind of doesn't exist. You know, it's a different world. It's like jumping into a different dimension. You get to be a different person. You get to say things. You get to hide behind, an avatar or a different handle or whatever. So you get to be yourself for the best you can be or the worst you can be. But mostly a lot of people like to be the worst on the internet.
Right.
But also, too, what I hate is when people let their feelings out on Twitter, because to me always that's just a sign of like they're needy and looking for attention. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when Facebook someone goes like, "Oh, please pray for me," and that's in you like, why should I pray for you? Now I got to dig into your life. Now I can't sleep because I'm worried about you.
Right,
I'm praying. But it just that everybody like gets all like, you know, like I always complain about is when people are going through these life changes of like, oh, I get it now. And, you know, it's all about balance. And I know this and I'm going to start doing yoga and I'm going to eat healthier. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you know, back in the day, you didn't tell everybody this. You just did it.
Yeah.
And right. It's like, shut up and do it.
No, I think, does that change it? Like when you now feel like you have an audience, it seems like it feels like everyone is kind of living their lives for an invisible audience.
Everybody's looking for attention. Know.
Everyone loves attention.
Right.
Fucking weird. This is we've built the narcissistic country.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, is it we're just better able to cater to a narcissism that's always been there?
Well, it's,
you know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
it's always been there. It's just now it's amplified.
Has it always been there?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because I was worried about that because I was thinking about how I was raised compared to how my mom was raised and how her mom was raised. I feel like that I was given, even though I complained about my life, but I had a very loving family and they gave me attention and I always had toys for Christmas.
They put up with you?
They put up with me. They pay for my sports and stuff. I mean, they really coddled me to the point where I don't even know if I'm a man anymore.
Don't start crying.
Okay.
Again, intervention.
I mean, let me tell you something. I cried 2 days ago and it was fantastic.
I love to cry.
Yeah.
I actually really enjoy crying.
Yeah.
I will deliberately make myself cry.
You make yourself? See, I can't.
Yeah. Like, because I know there's certain triggering things I can watch or I can do.
What do you watch? Will make you cry?
Strangely, there's a documentary called "The Woman Who Wasn't There."
What?
That's about this woman that was like an imposter after 9/11. There's certain things I can watch that like just immediately will kind of because I can identify with the sense of desolation or isolation, the self-loathing that would make you kind of create an identity But like for me, it's because it's just very cathartic because I often find that the way I deal with emotions is I tend to wait until it's safe to feel things.
Yeah.
So something can happen to me and it may not be safe to feel anything about it till like a week later.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I'm like washing dishes and I'm like, oh God, I'm like so butthurt over like that rejection from 4 days ago. Like that really was like powerful stuff for me or like so... I tend to like kind of need to be feel like I need to be in like a safe space to then like feel something and be vulnerable.
See, I guess there's different types of crying then because I cry mostly when people get together. Like if there's a huge stadium of people like chanting for someone, I'll just start crying. I don't know why. I'm like, this is what it's about right here. Connection, you know?
It's passion.
Passion, you know? And I'll also cry if like a soldier returns home, like surprise their parent. That's my go-to cry thing.
Yeah.
You know, but other than that, I mean, I can't cry if someone loses something. I'm like, that's tough for them.
Like, I cried in the airport when I was like watching the footage of the artists that were killed.
Oh, the Charlie.
There was something like profoundly sad about it to
me. It's extremely sad.
You know, I'm just sitting there going like, these are guys that are sitting in an office like drawing pictures. Like this is, they're drawing cartoons.
Right.
And someone, and then as the details unfolded and they're like, that people went in there and were like asking for people by name and just like,
I heard executing
them. Like
they
asking,
went in there and just shot first person to see, you know, when you go into places, a secretary, boom, just walks in and starts shooting.
Yeah.
People.
And there was something about it. It's like, and so I was sitting in the airport and I was like getting misty eyed because something about it was just, I don't know what made, because a lot of times I feel like maybe with,
it
like,
seems senseless. That's why.
Yeah. When I think with like 9/11 or something, it's like those numbers are like so big.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of like, you can't really wrap your mind around 2,000 people. You're like, it's sad, but I can't identify.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's something about, like, I could totally identify with, like, you're sitting in an office, you're just, like, doing your thing.
There's, like, 8 or 11 people. It's almost, I don't even really know them, but it seems like I know them because it's such a small number.
Yeah, like, there's something about it that's, like, you can immediately identify with the people. And so it's, like, definitely this feeling. And maybe it is in, like, the way that they deliver the news, which is, again, plays with your emotions.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of like, you know what I mean?
That's the worst. I don't like the media sensationalizing things and adding stuff like, just give me the facts. I don't need you to try to make me cry. I can cry on my own.
Yeah, but the problem is, who's facts? And
yeah.
And well, are they really facts?
But I think the media, like, you know, Edward Bernays was Sigmund Freud's nephew. And he was the guy that pioneered advertising as we know it today. He wrote a really famous book called Propaganda, I believe. And he was like, we used to call what we did in the U.S. propaganda, but then after World War II, people didn't like that word, so we changed it to PR. We changed it to public relations.
Wow.
So he kind of pioneered the way that we sell things from politics to whatever.
I didn't realize that.
So his famous thing was, you know, the first thing that we figured out is never, the way they used to sell a product was it's like, here's this water, here are its practical virtues, you should buy it. And like, that was kind of essentially the way advertising worked. And he was the one that was like, oh no, you can never appeal to people's rationality. You must always appeal to their emotional lives because those are far more powerful.
Absolutely.
And like, so it's interesting to me to see today, like the way that feelings are manipulated to get people to go to action. It's never their rational. The appeal is never to someone's like rational response.
Of course not. That's why everybody, every time they come out with a freaking iPhone, I always say that everybody wants a new iPhone. You don't need one, but you want one.
Right.
And that's why Apple's so great and has been great all these years. Well, I always say they're the only company on the planet that makes you stuff that you don't need, but you want.
I think one of their slogans at one point, and maybe a year ago, it was, either you got an iPhone or you don't.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, that's it? Yeah. And then everyone's like, I don't want to be the one left out.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
Well, it's kind of like The Interview when that came, like all this stuff was happening about The Interview movie. Yeah. And then I was seeing that, you know, people were getting into this like, oh, I'm going to go see it because screw
God,
North Korea.
Yeah,
And I was like, this is, and I tweeted something where I was like, you know, is Edward Bernays really dead? Because essentially what you've got, it's like a very Bernays kind of scenario, which is going to see The Interview won't make you a freedom fighter or politically active, but you'll feel like you are. And that's what's the most important thing is like how you feel.
And I hate stuff like that because it'll make me start to try to create conspiracy theories, which can drive a person crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, maybe Sony did this the whole time, you know?
And right.
Regardless if they did or not, I don't want to have those thoughts. I want to think about other things in my life.
Yeah.
But do you feel like your emotions are played with constantly in daily life because we're so connected to social media and because people in advertising is getting so much more clever about how they're going about doing that? We've always had product placement.
Yeah.
But I mean, now product placement to the nth degree because we're always connected to Twitter, to Facebook, to text messaging, to in addition to what was always there, which was like TV, billboards, da 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 da.
Sure.
It's like, and Netflix, like even now, like I was looking for a bike, and now, like every time I go search anything online, like these little banner ads will pop up, like this bike, you know, and I'm like, because they, like, I'm on one hand as a consumer, I'm like, well, that's awesome because they've figured out exactly what I'm looking for, and they're selling specifically to me. That's convenient, but at the same time, it's this thing of like, quit playing with my emotions, like they're kind of being manipulated 24/7. Like,
well, I mean, America is just one big corporation now, you know, so it's not even about people anymore; it's about making money, and that's it. And that's sad.
That's the American dream.
Yeah.
Make money and fuck people over.
And I thought I wanted to make money, and I do. I mean, no one wants to be broke, of course, but it's not my ultimate goal. I mean, in comedy, I want to make art. You know, I want to make people feel an emotion in a positive way. Like,
but don't you just enjoy? I feel like our jobs are similar because it's kind of like you. Well,
you know, I got to agree with her. I was telling my friend the other day, I said, comedians...
I told you...
I have a couple theories about this.
I told you. So do I. And I told you my whole line about that. When I shot my first porn star, I said, we have a lot in common because you fuck for a living and I get fucked for a living.
Well, I think that's how we bonded, right then and there. I think it's twofold. One thing is, and I said this in the interview with Greg.
Same thing with comedians. They get fucked for a living.
We do.
Exactly.
God, we do.
But I think it's
and
like,
we keep coming back.
Exactly.
Oh.
Masochist.
Yeah.
Well, I think the thing is that you, like, as comedians, comedians get to express feelings, one, that we're normally in everyday society not supposed to express, which is like you make fun of things, you're able to call out and ridicule things and like
talk about things in public that a lot of people aren't comfortable doing.
You're allowed to express things that are supposed to be kind of suppressed, essentially.
Yes.
And as in doing porn or something, it's like we're expressing something that's supposed to always be private.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the other way that it's similar is that, you know, through daily life, we're kind of taught to like control our feelings, but people go to comedy shows and it's like this safe place where they can like then like have the experience of like laughing and relaxing.
And it's interesting too, if you I bet it'd be like a porn shoot. If it was dark and the audience cannot be seen, that's how comedy clubs usually
are.
Right.
Yeah.
They laugh harder, they enjoy themselves more. But if it's a little more bright inside the room, they're kind of more reserved. Yeah. They're like, someone see me laugh at this, or someone see me enjoy this.
I mean,
so true.
Interesting?
Yeah.
Like, it's really, I saw a show with Dane Cook and there was like a heckler in the audience and he really went off on the heckler and it was like, for me, it was this interesting experience of, you know, that if someone had, it's like seeing someone have to deal with the actual consequences of something they were doing. Because it's like online, you can just make fun of things and like,
oh, yeah,
there's no consequence. And it was really interesting, like in a live environment, to see that suddenly like,
you can't
like that someone was like forced to deal with like the fact that they were comeback, like heckling.
It wasn't, and, like, it wasn't like a drive-by.
Was this the same show that I was at?
Yes.
I hosted that show. Yes. I remember that incident. Yes. Oh my God. So Dane Cook goes up there and just goes off on these nice ladies. Cause I mean, they're Asian ladies, and I don't want to sound, you know, mean, but they normally don't look like they're interested in what's going on.
Exactly.
So they're just sitting there like this and just, you know, chuckling a little bit. And then Dane just goes off on because they wouldn't give him the love and adulation and that. It's a crazy comedian thing. They're right. Why is all these people loving me and not you two?
Yeah.
So he focused on those two and not the other 200 people that loves him.
Wow.
And he goes off on them. And then I'm the host. I have to go up after him and bring the show back together.
And do like aftercare.
And these women are like, ah!
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
no, this must have been a different one then. Like, but...
Well, very cool. So I have to ask one more dumb question. Because I always like to ask this of comedians, though, like, you know, you're talking about feelings, but I always say, like, is there this dark, at what point in your life do you kind of go, like, I want to be a comedian and I want to express all these crazy thoughts that I'm having?
Oh, yeah.
When I tried to kill myself at age 20. Okay. That's your dark place right there. No, usually a comedian gets to the end of the rope of, like, trying to live in society, like, working a regular job or something. Yeah. And you're always the funny guy, but you don't know how to get into comedy. You don't know how to get into that field.
Yeah. Right.
And then you just one day go, you know what? I'm just going to try it.
Yeah.
And then ever since I went up the first time, I was like, I think I'm going to do this for the rest of my life.
Did you have that feeling the first time you did it?
Absolutely.
You literally went like, fuck, I found it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this, what made me appreciate it even more was the first time I went up, I did very well. I did very good, and I thought, well, I can just conquer this.
Exactly. Right. Piece of cake.
Yeah. Second time I went up, worst set still to this day I've ever had in my entire life.
Yeah.
And I'm still kind of go like, oh, God. But
it didn't discourage you.
It didn't discourage me at all. Right. It made me actually want to work harder.
Yeah. That's awesome, because like I always tell people, like, I started taking pictures when I was 10, and, you know, and I was like,
that still blows my mind that you're like, I was taking pictures of naked girls, and I was like, I was so awkward. I was like, are you over there having their clothes off and taking pictures? I'm barely, can I hold your hand?
I started looking at Playboy like when I was 5.
You just look at Dick Avery and you're like, that's pimping right there.
I looked in,
is all about confidence.
Yeah, I had business cards at 12 and I was like chasing
which
girls.
Which are kind of amazing. Like when I still look at that picture, the idea that a 12-year-old took it is still.
And I would sit there and say to it's the same thing with like what you're saying. And like, I always find that I've been blessed to know what I want. All my friends always yell at me through the years. You knew what you were going to do. I'm still trying. They're 40, still trying to figure shit out.
That's crazy.
And I would say, like, and you're one of the ones too that are blessed that like you found that. You found that little thing that makes you feel good.
But the key is also
But also it's a lot.
Go for it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people know what they want to do, but they're scared to try it and fail.
Yeah.
I always tell people you have to be
permission.
Yeah. I always tell people you have to be so stupid you don't listen to logic. You got to be really stupid.
Well, yeah.
Because logic tells you don't do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Go get a job at Starbucks.
Absolutely, yeah.
But you're like, nah, fuck it. I'm going to be stupid.
You know what's not logical? You know what's not logical? Dying. That doesn't make any sense. Why am I working my ass off my entire life to die one day? That's not logical.
Yeah, exactly.
So I always tell people, do whatever you want
to
do.
That's why I always tell people this whole American dream thing, to bring full circle here, is when I used to go to, I've been to Australia, a bunch of my friends down there, and I asked them 20 years ago, like, what's the Australian dream? And they go, there isn't one. And I bet you if you go to any country, where like, you're just in Paris, what's the Paris? There isn't. America's the only one with some kind of dream.
Yeah.
So I asked my friends in Australia, so if there was an Australian dream, what would it be? And they said, to get to the beach as often as you can.
Right.
And I'm like, that's a dream. We have the American nightmare.
Well, I mean, but our culture is founded on we have a different cultural legacy altogether.
Yeah,
I mean, if you're asked what's the Australian dream, it's like, don't get caught committing all those crimes we got shipped over here for committing. What I mean? But I'm saying like there's a cultural legacy here that is very specific and unique. And I think it's what makes American life amazing and awful.
Well, so like all the immigrants came here, anything, they had a dream make it, you know?
Yeah, but it's like anything short of absolute success is absolute failure. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of a con of culture.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's a unique legacy. So thank you for coming on today. Well,
thanks for having me.
It was a lot of feelings.
Yeah.
Let's do it again.
See, you didn't want to talk about feelings, and now you're like, okay.
Let's talk about
who
feelings.
Who has feelings over there?
So as my audience knows, I am the lovely Sovereign Sire and can be found on Twitter at at Sovereign Sire. And I'm also online with my amazing Julie Land blog, ilovesov.com. And Willie, where can people find you? Do you have a Twitter or a website?
Yes, Twitter at Will Hunter Show, W-I-L-L-H-U-N-T-E-R Show. And I perform stand-up throughout Los Angeles all the time. So if you're in town, check me out.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Say goodbye.
Bye, everybody.